Hey everybody, and welcome back. Issues, the only po comic podcast that had to do this episode three times now just to try to get it right. I'm your host Jason. With me as usual are Dick and Jamie.
Hey.
Hi.
And our returning guest Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
So yeah, Dick, it's on you, man.
Alrighty, so we wanted to do something different this time because one of the heroes that Jason really can't stand, and I don't really blame him, is generic Superman. Fucking just, you know, red, white, and blue, American values Superman. I'm not a big fan of regular Superman. He's kind of bland. It's kind of like eating a boiled chicken breast. There's no flavor. But if you take that same chicken breast and then deep fry it, it sounds delicious. And that's what we have here with Superman Red Sun. It's one of those Elseworlds releases. It's one of those what ifs, and pretty much what it looks at is what if Superman had hit the Earth 12 hours earlier and ended up in Soviet-controlled Ukraine on a farm that was a collective farm. And it's really interesting because it kind of sort of inserts us here at the beginning of sort of the hype of the Cold War in the 1950s. It's sort of an indeterminate year where it is in the 1950s, but the style of the buildings and everything sort of imply that. And so what's going on pretty much is Superman is being seen as this sort of peak embodiment of everything that the Soviet Union stands for, fighting for champion of the common worker. He fights a never-ending battle for Stalin, socialism, and the international expansion of the Warsaw Pact. So, you know, he's kind of this super sort of hammer and sickle, as it were. He's this new level of communism, as it were. He's this figurehead. And, you know, Stalin loves this. He has basically the ultimate super weapon. You know, the United States has nukes. Well, fuck it. We've got a Superman. So it's very interesting to see this sort of balance shift in the arms race go from basically the most simple of arms races, which is who can have the bigger bomb, to who can make the scarier, you know, biological weapon, pretty much. And what's really interesting about this is the U.S. wants their own Superman, and they want it pretty fucking bad because they can't deal with this, you know, invisible communist eagle, as it were, who's always watching your every move, can always hear everything, has heat vision and super breath, which is basically his ice breath, but they call it super breath because they're like, that sounds like a stupid power. And pretty much the CIA and the Star Labs sort of team up under the guidance of Lex Luthor, who is a legitimate scientist in this case, in this sort of universe. He's almost not quite a bad guy, but more of a good guy. It's very interesting to look at. What's also interesting about this is he's actually married to Lois Lane, who's working at the Daily Planet. And basically the CIA shows up and says, okay, so they've got a Superman. We want our own Superman. And Lex says, all right, I'll figure out a way to basically obliterate Superman. You know, standard Lex Luthor sort of motivation for anything that he goes through. And pretty much Superman is, you know, chilling in the Soviet Union. And then all of a sudden Sputnik 2 starts going down. And everybody's in the USSR is like, whoa, wait, what the hell? Did they shoot down one of our satellites? That doesn't seem like that's a cool thing to do. Oh shit, it's gonna crash into the United States. And what does Superman do? Well, he's there to help everybody. It's funny because he's championed as, you know, this communist sort of figurehead. But pretty much what happens is he goes over to the Metropolis and goes and stops this giant fucking satellite, Sputnik 2, from crashing into Metropolis, and he throws it into the bay and saves everybody, which Lex kind of wasn't expecting him to save everybody, but was banking on that chance. And it's actually interesting because this whole thing is an elaborate ruse to go ahead and get Superman to deposit genetic material onto this satellite. And so what ends up happening is he recovers the satellite, he ends up getting the DNA, and creates a sort of imperfect clone, a bizarro, if you will, of Superman. And so basically what's going on is I've got to sneeze. Edit this part out. Basically, what happens is after this whole thing happens and Lex starts growing his clone, Superman ends up meeting Wonder Woman at a diplomatic party. She ends up getting a big crush on Superman, which I'm pretty sure is canon to the regular comics between them. Is that right?
Off and on, depending.
Yeah, depending on who's the writer, pretty much, right?
And what continuity, etc. The usual DC fuck-ups.
Yeah. Pretty much, he meets her, and she's got the hots for him. But then he's got to go ahead and leave because he spots, and I'm going to totally butcher this Russian name, Pyotr Roslov? Is that right?
Pyotr.
Pyotr?
It's close to Peter
Roslov.
Okay.
Peter Roslov.
It's very close to Peter.
Okay.
Yeah, Mike's pronunciation's right.
And he's the chief of the NKVD, which is basically the internal police, internal affairs for the Soviet Union. He's also Stalin's illegitimate son, and he's basically an angry-ass drunk. And he's pissed off at the world and everything, and pretty much mostly at Superman, but the rest of the world's kind of fucking stupid to him, too. And since Superman showed up, the Soviet Union's power structure's been all fucked up, and pretty much, instead of being next in line to be the leader of the USSR, you have, Superman there, and they're like, well, fuck it, we'll just make Superman leader of the USSR. He seems to be literally the embodiment of communism, so fuck it, right? Or socialism. And so they're all hype about him and everything. And so Superman wants to go ahead and decline the leadership of the party because Stalin ends up getting poisoned during this party, and a little bit afterwards he ends up dying. He gets poisoned with cyanide, and Superman pretty much goes, no, I don't want to be the leader. I don't want to do it. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here to help people and not to lead people. And so what ends up happening is the Bizarro clone decides, hey, I'm going to go fuck with Superman because I'm also a Superman. And nothing really comes of that duel at all, but there's a nuclear missile that ends up getting launched at Britain. And the clone sacrifices himself in order to save millions of people by pulling the nuke away, because he's basically too perfect of a clone of Superman to actually be evil. And so he goes ahead and he saves millions and everything, but what ends up happening is Superman ends up getting the heroism and sort of the praise, but at the same time it also ends up causing a lot of problems with Anglo-American relations. Basically, Great Britain's like, what the fuck, America? What the fuck did you do? Like, seriously, what? Like, you nuked us? What the hell? And so so pretty much, Lex Luthor ends up getting super pissed off because it's implied that since his clone beats him at chess, Superman is actually smarter than Lex, and that's unsettling to him because he's supposed to be the smartest being in the world, and he doesn't want to be beaten by Superman. So he ends up murdering his entire researching staff because he goes fucking crazy, and then he ends up founding Luthor Corp. because he wants to dedicate his life to destroying Superman. And so he ends up abandoning Lois Lane, or Lois Luthor, I guess. Well, that's so weird to fucking say.
Yeah.
Pretty much, she wants to get fucked by Superman. She's like, damn, I'm so horny for Superman because my bald husband totally ignores me. And what ends up happening is Superman tries to put that all out of his mind and everything and not think about it, but he ends up meeting up with Lana Lazarenko. I probably butchered that.
An alternate reality version of Lana Lang.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she was a childhood crush of his, and things change entirely. After he sees the suffering of her and her children, Superman realizes with his powers he could pretty much be the best leader of the USSR ever, and that he could use it for a greater good. And so he goes ahead and he takes up the leadership position and tries to forge the USSR into a utopia. And so that's the end of the first sort of story arc and everything. And then this is picked back up in what's called Red Sun Ascendant. And it's part of the super issue. I totally fucked that up. Is it called something else? A big one, or I can't remember the right terminology.
Trade paperback.
Trade paperback. That's the one. It's all rolled together in the trade paperback, but it was released in two parts. originally. And so Red Sun Ascendant, it takes place in 1978, so it's been a while since Superman has taken over the USSR. It's been about, I want to say, 28 to 23 years or so. It's not very specified, but pretty much...
28 years.
Pretty much there's no intervention in East Germany, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, or Afghanistan. Pretty much the Soviet prosperity has spread to its satellites, and it's mitigated the existence of dissident movements in those societies. So Superman basically succeeded where the USSR failed, and actually was able to go ahead and take territories and add them to the USSR, to the Warsaw Pact. And so what ends up happening in America is JFK is president. Richard Nixon ended up getting assassinated. And he ended up winning the 1960 election, but died in Dallas, Texas in 63. And so Luther has devised and executed a bunch of different plans to try and go ahead and shut down Superman. None of them have worked, though. There's only two free nations that have not joined the Warsaw Pact, which is the United States and Chile. And both of them are pretty much on the brink of collapse. There's going to be gigantic economic recession, you know, war in the streets, people starving and things like that. And so what ends up happening is pretty much Kennedy is forced to grant independence to Georgia. And then he has to acknowledge that there's been similar secessionist pressures in Detroit and Texas, riots in California, and there's been a communist sympathizer terrorist attack on the White House. He also married Marilyn Monroe and divorced Jacqueline Barber Kennedy in this world.
With Jackie O.
And so, pretty much, on the other hand, though, you have Superman's led global Soviet Union. It's grown without resorting to war and has pretty much eliminated poverty and disease and all that. But this idea, this whole thing has started to infringe on individual liberties, and Superman is fast becoming a big brother-like figure. A brain surgery technique that turns dissidents into obedient drones or Superman robots is in use.
Yeah, the Superman robot being basically a lobotomy.
Pretty much, yeah. And so then you end up having Wonder Woman and Superman. They've teamed up. They're kind of a duo now, sort of hearkening back to just their interactions in Justice League. And they're using their superpowers to save lives, and they're doing that in addition to being an ambassador and governor and all that sort of stuff. And Wonder Woman's pretty much got the hots for Superman hard now. She really, really likes him. But she just sees her as a comrade and is pretty much oblivious to the fact that she wants to totally have sex. And so then what ends up happening is Lois Luthor, she takes over the Daily Globe from Perry White. Daily Globe. Why do I keep saying that?
This is a real newspaper.
Oy vey. Yep. So, pretty much, Luther plans to shrink all of Moscow, and that ends up failing because Brainiac ends up shrinking Stalingrad instead, so he totally fucks up his plan. Superman then intervenes and retrieves both Brainiac's central processing unit and the tiny city, putting an end to Brainiac and Luther's cooperation, although he's not able to change Stalingrad back to his regular size and the inhabitants. So... That's pretty much his one failure, and it's a source of guilt for him. It really eats at him that he can't fix Stalingrad. And so then, yes.
It's really good foreshadowing for the end.
Yes.
We'll leave it to the end.
Then what ends up happening is Lex Luthor gets in contact with Batman, who in this universe is a boy who was orphaned by Peter earlier in the story, and he's now a grown man and the head of an anarchist terrorist network that sees the abundance forced upon the people by Superman as little more than oppression. He's pretty much like, fuck you, this is fucking oppression. And they pretty much... continually succeed at avoiding Superman and his soldiers and everything, which doesn't make any sense, really. But, he ends up joining up with...
But then again, it's Batman.
Yeah, that's very true. What ends up happening, though, is Batman joins forces with LexCorp and with Peter, who's now head of the KGB and consumed with the jealousness of Superman, pretty much, to attempt a coup. They try to go ahead and overthrow Superman and the government. And they end up capturing Wonder Woman and using her as bait, and they hope to try and, you know, depower him by using red lights, pretty much, that are like the native sun of his planet. I was getting there. And the plan ends up working, except for Wonder Woman breaks free and then rescues Superman. Although that ends up doing a lot of damage to her in the long run because she snapped the golden lasso. And so she ends up becoming, her hair goes completely white, and she basically ages rapidly after doing this. And then Batman blows himself up to avoid being captured, but not before revealing to Superman that Peter had a role in the plot. And then he's turned into a Superman robot. And so then pretty much Luther begins another scheme to go ahead and try to, you know, overthrow Superman and everything. And he ends up finding the Green Lantern that was found in an alien ship that crashed at Roswell, New Mexico. Because if there wasn't enough parallels to real life events, that's another one that we can go ahead and just shoehorn in there. Pretty much, Batman is now a martyr. Everybody's like, oh my god, Batman died, what the fuck? And now there's a bunch of Batmen running around, which is a bunch of people dressed up as Batman. And Brainiac gets reprogrammed into Superman's aide, and they start constructing the Fortress of Solitude, but it's basically the Soviet Fortress of Solitude in Siberia. It's also referred to as the Winter Palace. And so now we're kind of at the end of the whole thing. The whole story, we are at Red Sun setting, which takes place in 2001, and pretty much all of the world except for Chile and what's left of the USA, which went and underwent a horrible civil war in 1986, pretty much 16 unnamed states have seceded from the Union, and within the Soviet area, there's no crime, no poverty, unemployment, nothing. If you are a dissenter, though, you'll end up becoming Superman Robot, and Superman is committed to winning the argument with the U.S. and keeps refusing to invade, pretty much. He doesn't want to go ahead and start war, because he's like, the rest of this has been bloodless, it's been a nonviolent revolution, why should I have to resort to violence now? And so, he keeps thinking about Stalingrad, and Stalingrad ends up getting attacked by some green microscopic organism that kind of looks like a sheep louse, and it basically causes a bunch of havoc on Stalingrad.
Yeah, it was probably a fucking louse. Ugh.
But then, while he's dealing with that, Luther ends up running and winning the American presidency with Jimmy Olsen as his vice president. He succeeded the President Friedman, whose misrule resulted in food riots and tanks on New York's First Avenue. Pretty much, whether or not this is Milton Friedman or not, it's not really clear. They don't explain that directly. But basically, what ends up happening is Luther fixes everything. He uses scientific expertise and his huge amounts of money and dictator-like powers to go ahead and basically pick the USA up off its ass, reunite it, and go ahead and get everybody fed and, you know, have them making money and everything. Basically showing that capitalism can work again. And he also basically ends up fixing what ended up happening over the last 15 years.
Which I kind of suspect was all his doing, considering that he gave the president the formula to balance the budget.
And inflation.
Yep.
And inflation. Those are two forces you don't fuck with, balancing the budget and ending inflation. But economic aside, go on again.
Well, basically what ends up happening is, you know, after he fixes the last 15 fucked up years, he fixes the country and, you know, everything is going to plan. Although he's still pretty much asocial and very much reserved and everything, because this is only a larger part of his plan to go ahead and provoke Superman into invading so he can be destroyed. And pretty much Lois and Lucy Lane Olsen.
Lois's sister.
Yeah. They're in the deserted offices of the long-closed Daily Planet, and Luther confronts, and you know, they're chilling there. They're talking about, why would Lex close this down? He knows that I love it, and basically she's like, he's doing it to hurt me. And that's not really touched on upon too well, unfortunately, that subplot there. But Luther basically shows up and is in the Siberian Winter Palace. He somehow manages to get into the Fortress of Solitude, which I believe he's done before several times in the actual comics. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting seeing that paralleled here. But pretty much what ends up happening is, in a very anticlimactic moment, Brainiac ends up, you know, basically snatching up Luther and puts him somewhere in the fortress to get turned into a Superman robot. And Superman basically says, my hand's been forced, I've got to go ahead and invade. And he starts to take on the East Coast. He literally comes to show up to fight a war by himself. And he defeats the entire Green Lantern Marine Corps, which somehow they had enough Green Lantern rings for an entire corps of fucking Marines.
Oh, Luther had been replicated.
Yeah.
I don't think it was Luther replicating them so much as Gardner, like, imagining all the rings for them, considering that he was capable of imagining so much in that concentration mm-hmm. camp.
That was crazy.
Oh yeah, Hal Jordan basically ended up getting taken prisoner in a concentration camp of the Soviets.
No, he was in a cage.
And so he ends up making an entire concentration camp for communists in his head, and it's very vividly detailed, and it's because of his willpower that he wasn't broken by being basically behind enemy lines for 4 years. And so
the scariest part is he manages to imagine this concentration camp being created by one man in real time. You know, he imagines
him same.
Yeah. He imagines putting in every brick, shoveling out every last bit of it.
And so then, yeah, once Hal Jordan was basically taken out, the whole chain of the Marine Corps was taken down as with
and
him.
And so then they end up fighting the Amazon forces, who is led by a highly disillusioned Wonder Woman and a collection of super menaces, which is basically just bad guys that Lex has built over the years to try and kill Superman.
But interestingly, each of these super menaces is corresponds to an actual character in Superman. They're just that world's version of, like, Parasite, Gog, Metallo, etc. Even Doomsday is in there.
And so, basically, Brainiac spaceship shows up and fucks the entire U.S. Pacific fleet. Basically, another Pearl Harbor, if you will. And then the two super beings meet at the White House, and Lois is there with the last weapon, which is a small note that's written by Lex, which manages to break Superman's resolve. It reads, why don't you just put the whole world in a bottle, Superman? And so Superman tells Brainiac, yo, stop the invasion and shit. But then Brainiac's like, I didn't get reprogrammed. I've been using you the whole time, Superman. And hits him with green radiation, which is, it could or could not be kryptonite. It's not made very clear, but I guess it's basically supposed to be kryptonite. And basically, Brainiac is saying, you know, the entire universe will hum to his battery. And he ends up getting shut down by Luther, who evaded surgery somehow. That they don't explain that at all, but it's Lex Luthor, so God knows what he did.
Yeah.
During the invasion, and then Brainiac ends up getting destroyed by Superman, which triggers a failsafe self-destruct. So pretty much, it's lightly implied that Lex figured this would happen. And there's basically a bunch of mini black holes inside of it that are powering the ship, and they're threatening to explode. So Superman rockets it out into outer space, where it ends up blowing up. And the Earth is saved, but they think that Superman ended up getting caught in the explosion, which was said to have had a kill radius of 15 million miles. And so Superman gets blown the fuck up, supposedly. And so then there is an epilogue that sort of follows after that. The whole Soviet Union falls apart and everything, and ends up getting transformed by Batman. And then Lex goes on to integrate many of Superman's ideas into his new philosophy of Lutherism and form a global United States. And this kind of becomes the defining moment for mankind's future as it enters an unprecedented age of peace and stability. And there's a benevolent world government. It's formed and maintained. And, you know, Luther ends up presiding over a bunch of scientific achievements, including the cure to all known diseases, colonization of the stars. You know, he lives for well over 2,000 years. And at his funeral, it's revealed that Superman survived and is pretty much immortal. And even though this is unknown to Lois, who's outlived her husband. But pretty much permanently retired from the public view, he goes on to describe Lucifer's descendants culminating in Jor-El, whose intellect exceeded that even of his beloved ancestor. And billions of years in the future, it's revealed that Earth is being torn apart by tidal stresses from its sun, which has become a red giant, and Jor-El and Laura send their infant son rocketing back into the past. The final panels of the comic book depict the landing of Kal-El's time ship in a Ukrainian collective in 1938, effectively causing a predestination paradox. So basically, this is one hell of a fucking ride. It is full of ups and downs. It is one of the best fucking what if stories I have ever read in comics. What do you guys think?
It was certainly a different take on the original Superman story that everybody knows, and it just kind of amazes me how, with this different take, you still kind of end up with all the same sides playing out, and for the most part,
everyone's identity almost like meshes into their normal universe identities, and that's actually a really good thing that you noticed there, Jamie, considering that whole comic is, again, it's a what if, and it's actually really, really good. I like it.
Yeah. I agree. It was a really good... Well, it's Mark Millar, so, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it is Mark Millar. That is very true. What did you think, Jason?
The ending fucked with me.
Yes, I will agree with that.
That's where it kind of fucked with me, too. But I am a fan of predestination paradoxes and basically like kind of fucked up time travel, but this still fucked with me. But it can't be helped.
I just like the fact that they, you know, literally pointed out, you know, you always have the duality, you know, Superman and Lex Luthor. Mm-hmm. But this goes a step further and says, no, it's not just that. That duality exists through all time.
All time and apparently all universes.
It's like Superman cannot escape the inevitability that he is, in this case, blood-related to the man who tried to kill him.
Well, to be fair, though, they didn't realize it at the time, and there was absolutely no way for even Lex Luthor to have lived to the time where Kal-El, as he would have been, which would have been like Kal-Lex Luthor in this universe, would have been sent back into the Ukraine, so... billions upon billions of years ago for Kal-El. And since Luthor has only lived about 2,000 years, that's like a little chunk, absolutely tiny chunk of human consciousness where they could figure this out. And it's never revealed to either of them that they're related, so.
But still, I mean, overall with the narrative, it kind of poses that idea.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those fucking stories that just was like, what the fuck? Like, honestly, the entire time at the end, like, even the entire time is just like, every way that everything's built. The first time I read this in 10th grade in high school, and I picked it out because it was valid for a reading assignment in my English class, and it was a visual novel, graphic novel, so I was like, fuck it, I'm not gonna actually read a book. I'm going to go ahead and read this because it's a comic and apparently it's perfectly valid for me to do a report on. And so I ended up reading it and it just blew my mind to just think, well, I never really thought about what if histories. I mean, yeah, I've played, you know, Age of Empires and stuff, but this really made me think. And it was definitely one of those sorts of things where I wasn't ready for, first of all, the universe that was set up. And secondly, the way that all of these characters were tied in so neatly. You know, a lot of the characters that Superman interacts with, Batman, Wonder Woman, you know, the Green Lantern, all that, are all tied into this universe in such a way that they're there, and it gives a sort of a nod and a kickback to all of these other adventures that happen in these universes, but without doing it in a way that's, you know, ham-fisted. Everything makes sense in the way that it sort of plays out in this fucked up alternate reality, you know? And that's what really appealed to me most about this.
Yeah, I mean, gotta hand it to DC. When they go all out with their, you know, what if ideas, they really go all out.
They do.
This piece actually is a good counterpoint to another one we're going to be reading eventually called JLA The Nail, which is what if the Kents got a nail in their tire, which made them miss where Superman landed.
Hmm. Oh. Interesting.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, it's like this little twist to an idea sends these huge ripples out through the storyline, you know?
Wouldn't that have gotten, like, the U.S. government taking up the baby then?
We don't know yet. I'm not going to tell you, because I have read it. It's funnier than that.
Okay. There's no need for it then. All right. Well, I like the alternate universe, considering that, one, it laughably broaches the notion that Nixon could win an election against Kennedy, of all things.
Yeah.
But to be fair, though, that kind of foreshadows that the U.S. is getting pretty well fucked over as soon as the 1950s hits. And it just gets worse from there. Got the effects of Luther's treasury balancing and inflation destruction running on the U.S., and that absolutely destroys the economy. I don't exactly remember why, but you need a little inflation, just not a whole lot, just a little. Without inflation, there's no reason to accumulate wealth. Without accumulating wealth, you don't have rich people. And without rich people, you don't have commercial growth. So my guess is, I'm just trying to just, I'll think on it, why the U.S. would be crumbling from these two forces at the same time. But, I just like the alternate history of the whole thing.
I think the really interesting part about this as well is, unofficially and in a very roundabout way, it's a very interesting look at the evils of nationalism. And not only that, but the evils of socialism and how capitalism is kind of the way, as it were. And it's definitely very propaganda heavy. I'm not going to lie about that. It's very obvious that it was, you know, made as sort of this knockoff propaganda piece almost. Not so much that it was designed to actually be propaganda, since this was released well after the Soviet Union was an issue. But it's definitely interesting to look at it and kind of see where they were going with this and what they were doing with it, because it definitely reads as a classic sort of a warning of socialism. And even then, it also shows you that nationalism and capitalism are still evil forces as well. I mean, you have Lex Luthor, who dedicates his life to destroying Superman. That's not exactly the nicest thing ever, but it also shows you the positives of capitalism and things like that. And it's really interesting, too, because it approaches the horseshoe theory as well, because it looks at the fact that, you know, Lex looks at Superman's shit and is like, you know, some of this shit isn't half bad. I'm going to go ahead and implement this. And, you know, it kind of shows you this. It's almost like a sick, cruel joke at the end of the day, because as far as Lex knows, Superman's dead. But here he is looking through Superman's personal effects and he's like, you know, we agreed on a lot more than I thought about. It's a shame he had to die.
I think one of the more interesting things is that, you know, it really is. This is such one of the forward of the comic. It's not a black and white world. It's all, everybody's all shades of gray. No one is really truly a hero. Everybody's got an angle. You know, it's not like, really, I don't feel like it's like saying that one side is better than the other side. It just really feels like a role reversal. And I think one of the most interesting parts of that is really early on when you see all the Soviet propaganda posters with Superman all of them, and then they show the Americans and looking at these and saying, who would read this crap? Because that's just probably how the Russians really felt about a lot of our propaganda. You know?
Mm-hmm. To be fair, though, with the Russian propaganda, they were basically, rather than, no, now that I think about it, a lot of their propaganda was literal supermen meeting quotas that were impossible to finish. Like, for coal mining, if I remember correctly, they basically had a hero coal miner that had, that did, like, the work of four or five men to get the hero of the Soviet Union star. And these heroes over in the Russian side were basically used to oppress the Russian populace with these unmeetable quotas that were essentially just there to force more and more work out of the Russians. So on one hand, this whole thing feels like a parody of that. That Superman is like a parody, the Red Sun Superman is a parody of oppressive Russian, like, communist superheroes that were not really superheroes. They were just there to oppress. It's fucked up. But yeah. Pretty good.
Not only that, but... Wow. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go for it.
Not only that, but just overall, it's really just a big laugh at the Cold War in general. It takes a look at the fact that we had nukes and the space race and all this shit and says, fuck that. What if we had superheroes and we were trying to get the best superhero and that was our race, that was our ultimate Cold War, as it were. And it really laughs in the face of this whole idea of the fact that we even had the Cold War.
That is an interesting point. There's a scene that I want to take a specific look at, though. That's the scene where Wonder Woman snaps the lasso.
Oh, wow, yeah. I admit, that was something I really didn't think, you know, was connected to about if he actually broke it, would actually destroy her spirit, destroy her body. I mean, has that ever been looked at in the continuities before? I don't think it has.
No, not to my knowledge.
What I really like is the symbolism of it. Wonder Woman, who has been blindly following Superman, who's absolutely infatuated with him and in love with him, metaphorically breaks her bonds to communism and socialism and all these things and this sort of ideal of the USSR in a very literal way. She snaps her lasso, and it's a metaphor of her breaking her bonds from thought slavery, as it were, which is why when Lois Lane shows up, she's like, yeah, no, we'll totally go ahead and the Valkyries will fight Superman. That sounds like a perfectly great idea. And it's really one of those moments where you're just like, hey, I see what you did there. And it's a really good look at just overall this idea that people who can't think for themselves are enslaved, you know?
But also in the same view, it could be a metaphor for the giant picture of the comic where benevolent living and prosperity comes at the price of slavery, and those who wish to remain free have to do so in poverty and in the shadows. And it, because you know, those, the minute she breaks her bond, she turns old and crusty and like is in pain. It's, you know, when you're living on your own, it's a lot more difficult a life than having somebody care for you. But when you're someone's caring for you, then you don't have the freedom.
Yeah, and it is a really interesting dichotomy.
Yeah, that's right. I can find symbolism in shit. Yeah.
Well done.
But that scene is just so pivotal. It's the point where, you know, Wonder Woman proves she's, you know...
her own woman, essentially.
Yeah, not just that, but proves, A, she can break an unbreakable lasso.
At extreme personal cost.
Extreme cost. But at what cost? Freedom, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, she gives up, as it were, her identity of being this sort of ally of the Soviet Union. She gives that up, and she destroys that link to Superman in a very, very literal way by breaking the lasso. And It's very interesting to look at this and look at sort of just overall what's going on with that and everything, because it's trying to figure out what I'm trying to say here. Sorry, I'm repeating myself.
No, I get it.
It's
now there's go for it.
I'm done. Sorry, I started speaking and I don't have anything to say. We'll just edit this in post. Fuck.
There is an interesting kind of parallel between the two quote unquote utopias. Luthor's utopia, he does it through, you know, manipulating the economy and manipulating things behind the scenes, but not manipulating the people directly. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Superman's Soviet utopia is very Orwellian. You got people, you know, spying on their friends and neighbors and saying, hey, this guy's a dissident. And they're taken, you know, back, pretty much given a lobotomy, turned into a Superman robot.
Yeah, pretty much. They're literally robbed of all their free will.
Although it's a little, it's in the case of Peter at least, it's a little less severe than a lobotomy, but not by much. He's still able to talk, he's still able to speak, he's still able to move and walk around, but he doesn't have the option to do what he wants.
And every time they show him as a Superman robot, he's got that big, forced, almost Joker-like grin.
Yes.
That he he literally cannot stop smiling like that because of the conditioning.
And heck, even if you look at the Batman, when they're all turned into Superman robots as well, they've all got fake smiles plastered onto their faces as well. Although it's a close to a smile, but nonetheless, it's very much a fake smile plastered on all of their faces as they help out around the place.
I mean, it's almost scary seeing this side of Superman.
But it's not unexpected, considering that the best trilogy for a Superman series would be, one, he gets there, two, he sets himself up as a hero, and then three, he becomes a tyrant because he's sick of having to do all this hero shit.
And, you know, that's kind of funny, because it seems like often in the history of Superman, especially in cases of other continuities, he becomes evil a lot.
He really does.
Uh-huh. And really kind of to pull somebody from the Killing Joke, it only really takes one bad day to turn him into Lex Luthor.
Pretty much, yeah. It's definitely interesting, and it's definitely Superman represents the paradigm of, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And anytime Superman is in some sort of a position of authority, or even still, when he loses everything, another good example is, I can't remember what the name of the comic is, but it's where Superman goes on a killing rampage and literally murders fucking everybody. If any of our comic historians can help me out here with that, aka Jason.
The only one that's really springing to mind is in the Injustice comic book.
There's another one, too. It's an actual, comic.
Yeah.
But I can't remember the name of it right now. But even in that, you know, you take a look at it, and Superman has everything taken from him, and his abilities and power, which are greater than any man on Earth ever could be, he turns into a crazy psychotic killer, you know? And so it's very much a look at this idea of, if you have absolute power, if you're the most powerful being ever, you will be corrupt, regardless of how hard you try to be a good person. And it really goes ahead and shows that personal liberties are more important and much more necessary than it is for you to be protected by the state, or in this case, protected by Superman. Because Superman holds all the cards, he's the one who has all the power, and because of that, he controls whether or not you live or die and all of these other crazy things. And it really shows you that you can't centralize your power either into one being or into a single body or organization. I'm looking at you, Congress.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but that's not within the purview of a comic podcast. That's your meeting down by the docks, you know?
Very fair, very fair. But yeah, no, pretty much, like, It's always interesting to see how Superman becomes this villain, though, because of his abilities, because he has all this power, because he is this omnipotent, you know, being.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking about it. I'm just like, what other continuity besides this see Superman really work up to his mental, mental extents?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he proves himself to be smarter than Lex fucking Luthor. I mean, that's like literally walking up to Reed Richards and slapping him in the face, you know?
No. Reed Richards slaps you.
And that's not his hand.
Hey. Wouldn't it be more impressive to get him to slap his cell
phone? I was referring to the Malice incident, which is kind of a meme, but whatever. I can do it that way.
Hey.
But yeah, you're seeing Superman, unlike the normal comics where it's all about his strength. In this, it's all about his resolve and his, you know, will to be better than Luthor and his straight intelligence level.
Right. And not that the regular Superman is dumb by just, any of that.
They tend not to, you know, push the intelligence on him.
Yeah.
Mostly because the more intelligent your character becomes, the less relatable they become to the audience.
Exactly. Which is why when you have characters like Lex and you have characters like Dr. Doom and things like that, it's very interesting to see how they become fan favorites and stuff, because you would think that they would be unapproachable because they're on this different level of intellect. But the thing is they're villains, whereas Superman is a hero. So it's this sort of interesting paradigm of, you know, people who are evil are smarter than me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the strangest tropes you see in comics, is that if someone is smarter than you, they're evil. And I don't understand exactly how this trope started, but you see it all the time with all sorts of different villains and heroes and things like that. And generally, the heroes tend to be naive and dumb, whether it's Superman or even Batman, for that matter. Batman's not exactly the smartest guy. He thinks people can be reformed, you know? That's why he sends Joker to...
Wait. Super Batman is one of the smartest people in DC. The problem is he's also one of the most naive.
Exactly, which is what I mean by dumb. Mm-hmm. In a sense that he thinks that, you know, people like Joker can change, you know, and that's just not the case. You know, he thinks that Two-Face can change, and that's not the case. You know, these people have severe psychiatric sort of disorders and you know, sometimes physical disfigurement that really fucks with their brain. And yet, here you are, with this fucking, you know, this guy who thinks, you know, no, they're still good in them. I promise you, they're still good in them. And it's just interesting to see this, you know, the villains are either smarter than you or they're better than you in a way, almost. It is kind of an interesting way to look at it. And this is very much exemplified in this Red Sun, is that Superman is the perfect being, and that makes him the perfect villain.
Never really looked at it that way. Strangely, though, while you were thinking about that, while you were, you know, telling this, I had a thought. It also, miniseries also deals a bit with nature versus nurture. Specifically in, you know, mainstream Superman, you know, comes into Smallville and grows up with American values. And he doesn't try to jump the chain of command. He, you know, he's a Boy Scout.
Yeah.
But in Red Sun, he, you know, he's given more power and authority, and it's a show of how he uses it. But at the same time, he's still the good-natured person. Even if he's doing things that are, quite frankly, fucked up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
it's kind of interesting to see that Superman would go further under the communist regime than he did under, you know, the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Well, see, the thing is, since he inherited the title of Man of Steel from his, like, adoptive, like, secondary father, Stalin, It almost makes sense, because Stalin was responsible for, like, the greatest military purge in history.
Yep.
And then you got all the other purges of just pure, like, dissidents. Like, well, we don't care for this communism thing. You're dead. And the greatest purge of, like, photos and pictures in the Russian archives.
Yeah.
In history. It's just... It just kind of, maybe it's just a reflection of how Stalin did things, that did on Superman when he was maybe 16, 17. We don't know. We don't know how old he was when Stalin.
Oh, hold on a sec. Let's
got
see.
A hold of him.
The crash lands in 1938.
Uh huh.
And he's an infant, and then it's 1958 when he takes over as leader of the Communist mm-hmm. Party.
No, 1950s when Stalin... Well, yeah, actually, that would be about the time...
It was 1958. It was the year that party took place.
Mm-hmm.
So he's 20.
Yeah.
That's still pretty young.
Yeah, that is pretty young. But also, another thing that this tackles in a very, very roundabout and interesting way, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. If you look at it, all Superman wants to do is make sure everybody's taken care of and fed and can be prosperous and everything. And yet, all he ends up doing is becoming the villain. He ends up becoming the bad guy at the end of the day. And it's because he wants to help everyone, because he needs all of this control over their lives, he becomes the villain and becomes this evil sort of force. And, you know, that's really a good metaphor for communism or socialism in itself. I mean, it's this thing that seems like it's going to help everybody, but all it ends up doing is fucking everybody over.
True enough. Wow, that's actually a lot more political discussion in this than I was expecting.
Yeah, no, there's a...
Well, to be fair, though, it is a very, very political comic.
Well, yeah. I mean, anytime you get into the discussions of the Cold War or anything based in the Cold War, you're gonna have political shit come out of it.
Yeah. Another thing I thought that was really interesting, honestly, was the cameos.
Oh, yeah.
Like the superhumans that Luthor creates. You got... The flame, the atomic skull, Doomsday, Parasite, Tallow, you know, all these really DC mainstays, you know?
Yeah.
And then when you have the Green Lantern Marine Corps, got, let's see, led by Hal Jordan, then you had Alan Scott in it, Kyle Rayner, Guy Gardner, I think even John Stewart.
Yeah, he was John Stewart.
So you get these little cameos in this what-if scenario that are just really interesting to see.
They're kind of blink if you miss it, too. The only one right. you really, really, really get, like, shoved in your face is Hal Jordan.
Right.
The Green Lantern. He's absolutely the Green Lantern.
I did look it up, Mike. Lex Luthor did replicate both the rings and the power batteries.
Oh, well, okay.
So it wasn't Guy's willpower. It was mass-produced.
Right.
Which, really, is kind of funny, because you think the first moment they activated that ring, out there in Oa, the Guardians would be like, what the fuck just happened? There's a couple hundred lanterns that were not there a minute ago.
That would really... That actually... Why wouldn't that set up the Earth for a secondary invasion by the Green Lantern Corps?
That'd be the point where the Guardians go, hey, all Green Lanterns, please report to Sector 2814. Something really fucked up just happened.
We got several hundred officers that just suddenly appeared out of nowhere. Please respond.
Yes, we've got an all points bulletin out for all of these brand new cops. They're Green Lanterns. We have no idea where the hell they came from.
Yeah. just showed up, man. Just like, boom, they're there.
Fucking stole our rings, man. What the fuck?
They jacked our tech, and they're not even helping the universe. They're just sitting on Earth.
Yeah, what the hell?
Oh, what? They're there to take out one fucking Kryptonian? Jesus fucking Christ! That's the other thing. You can't really call him Kryptonian in this.
No.
Yeah.
No, he's technically Earthling, somewhat.
He's I wouldn't call it human at that point, since this is billions of years later, so evolution does take place.
But wait, there's one problem, though. I mean, oh, never mind. I was going to say, how does the red sun affect him? I don't get it, and then it reminded me.
Yeah.
It returns him back to standard.
Right, never mind.
But unfortunately, there's also another thing. Why does the green light fuck him up?
It's supposed to be kryptonite.
It's supposed to be kryptonite radiation. Yeah.
It's supposed to be kryptonite radiation, yes, but there was no green light on Earth. There is no green light radiation shit.
More to the point, there is no kryptonite because kryptonite was formed by the remnants of an exploded krypton.
Well, yes. Then you have to consider that they're simply using the green, the jury-rigged Green Lantern rings as they are.
Well, not only that, but green is the exact opposite color of red, so it would make sense that...
No. No, green is opposed to yellow.
No. I'm gonna say the paints.
Yeah.
Green is actually the opposite of red.
If you invert it, yeah.
And we're talking color theory, not Green Lantern.
Yeah,
and the Lantern Corps.
It's all good. Don't worry about it. We're literally talking about colors, though. So, in essence, it's capitalism because green is money, and so you could look at it as though he's being hit with non-communist ideals. I mean, that's kind of a stupid way to look at it, but you know, that's technically what you could say it is.
Yep.
Or they just found a spectrum of radiation that happens to hurt them, and it happens to be green.
Yeah, I'm just going to go with Occam's razor and say that they just found radiation that could hurt him.
Well, he's still, it is a Green Lantern ring. It might be
well,
a...
Well, no. This
is when, but it still works.
No, this is when Brainiac blasts.
Yeah.
Oh, and Brainiac blasts. Oh,
it could just be that Brainiac has kryptonite. Like, he is Brainiac. He is a level 12 intelligence.
Uh-huh.
It could be that he developed kryptonite and has been holding on to it for all the while, not giving it to Lex because he was going to take over the USSR after the useful idiot Superman was done being the useful idiot. You know?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But it wouldn't be kryptonite in the end. It would be something else.
Yeah, uranium or something, probably. Well, no, it couldn't be uranium because he stopped a nuclear blast. I don't know.
Also, can we take a moment to just bask in the glory that is Batman Zushanka?
Yes.
Oh my god,
I love that hat.
It's
I
so
love
fucking
that,
perfect.
That is
Batman
a,
hat.
Yeah, that hat is.
That
sexy.
Is one of the best Batman designs ever. Just hands down, that is like one of the best ways that I've ever seen Batman portrayed. Not only that, but I also like the fact that, you know, he's literally going to do whatever it takes to get the job done instead of being traditional Batman. He's just fucking crazy.
But then again, he's also Russian, which would explain that part so well.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't think there's much of a distinction between being crazy and being Russian.
No, not in this day and age, no. Mm.
No, we're not actually racist against Russians.
We're respecting your Slavic tendencies.
Pretty much. But yeah, well. Hey now. Actually we are just under, Dick.
Oh, nice. Good shit.
But yeah, that brings us to the end of another episode. So what's your final verdict? Do you think people should read this?
Go read it. This is literally one of my favorite comics, and I'm not big on comics. You guys already know that. Most things I'm reading are new to me. This is one that I suggested because I read it in high school, and it's fucking amazing. Go read it. It's going to blow your mind. I know we kind of went through a synopsis of everything, but we didn't do it justice, and I'm sure that there's symbolism we missed out on easily.
And it's really that breadth of symbolism and that breadth of metaphor that makes it just so incredible. Mark Millar really outdid himself. You absolutely should go read it.
From my perspective, yes, absolutely. It is an absolute must read. First time you read that fucking ending, though, is when you will get fucked up.
Yeah. Well, that was a fucking... I did not see that coming.
Even if you see it coming... It still fucks you up. I don't understand how that works. It's so strange. I love this comic. I love the pieces. I love the little, like, political commentary. I love the, like, the history commentary. I like them teasing all the U.S. and the Russians. Just, it's great.
Well,
I got nothing else to say.
You heard it here. Read the comic. Tune in next week when we're going to discuss Bible Black.
All right.
Not really.
I was going to say, VNs are kind of out of our scope of support.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm up for it anyway.
Challenge accepted.
You just like dick girls, Mike.
So?
How do you think I'm here?
Hey, okay, hey. So it's time for us to call this quits.
Yeah, and with that, out of all tranny joke, we think we're going to say goodnight, people.